This is the August 21 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Brian Stark. He's with the Andersons in Mansfield, Illinois. Dave Chatterton is here with Strategic Farm Marketing out of Champaign, Illinois. And we're joined by Kurt Kimmel of AgMarket.net in Normal, Illinois. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media, public radio for the farming world, online at willag.org, W-I-L-L-A-G.org. And next week, we'll be at the Farm Progress Show in Decatur. Our Commodity Week programs run daily at 10 o'clock. The Farm Doc team is there at 11:30, and the crop scientists are with us on stage in the University of Illinois tent at 11 a.m. The full schedule is online at willag.org. Check it each day. We have many folks that will be dropping by, and we'd like to see you there as well. Again, the calendar, all in red in the calendar. You'll find what's happening in the University of Illinois tent each and every day at the Farm Progress Show in Decatur. Let's begin with Kurt Kimmel, who will be making his way to the Farm Progress Show next week. Thank you very much for doing that. This week, however, we need to talk about the Pro Farmer Crop Tour, which took place. By the time this airs, we'll have the final numbers from Pro Farmer, which will be their national and statewide numbers. They differ widely from what you see on the Crop Tour because they do a lot of adjustments. However, what do you think of the numbers that have been coming out of Crop Tour to this point?
Well, the bean pod caps are just huge. May have to go ahead and finish off good shape. We have a fairly larger bean crop on that. There is some sudden death, stem rot. The thing on this, some of these fungus and diseases are a little earlier than usual. If it was a little later here in September, but, you know, it can maybe take a little bit off the top. But the biggest observation probably is in the corn, that southern rust. And watching some of the videos, and I don't think they were AI altered, but some of those participants come out orange and there's heavy rust. I'm not quite for sure. Some of those participants went to the hardware store to get some WD-40 to spray the shuck to loosen it up to count the kernels. I mean, I was really surprised how thick that is, particularly in Iowa. So let's, you know, see how that unfolds in through here. Guys are really testing the fungicide here on longevity of it and whether they sprayed or not. The other thing too is I heard some guys went a little heavier on population, so the ear counts are fairly good in some areas. And the bottom line is we still have a little bit of time here. We'll just have to see how the crop finishes out.
In the state of Illinois, the USDA put this year's crop at 221 bushels to the acre. That was on August 1st. The Crop Scouts on their tour, which includes not southern Illinois, so it takes in the best two-thirds, maybe 80% of the state, really, I guess the upper half for them when you look at their routes, they're at 199 plus about 4.5 bushels, so they're around 204, roughly speaking. For a statewide average, do you think it's only that good, really?
Yeah, I think that's probably true. I think, obviously, you mentioned that they make adjustments here. We'll get to the final state yield, but certainly over the last two or three weeks in East Central Illinois, where it's been dry, Kurt mentioned disease, even in this area, rust has been a big issue, and I think it's too early to tell how much of a negative impact it is, but the disease pressure has run rampant. You generally see that when you have wet and warm conditions earlier around pollination, and now we've entered a period of dry weather. So to me, it feels like everyone we've talked to feels like the crop size, while good, is not as big as last year's in the Illinois sector.
Brian Stark, of course, is with the Andersons. Dave Chatterton, when you think about that number that came out from USDA that was looking at the crop size on August 1st, do you think nationally that's the biggest number we might come up with for the year? Where do you suppose the September figure might land?
Yeah, Todd, always a little bit of a you know, spin the wheel type of a deal with the USDA, but I think we're in a position where the market, when you kind of back off and maybe look at the bigger picture of the pro farmer numbers in general, we've been talking about Illinois. When you look at them in general, I think the market wanted to look at two things. One, I think there was the confirmation that the record yield potential that the USDA indicated in the August report was going to be there. And I think we checked that box. I think there's no doubt about that, particularly in the Western Corn Belt, as Kurt alluded to. I think the second thing that, the trade was really looking for in terms of price was, are these yields actually going to go higher? And there was a lot of talk, big crops get bigger, USDA, you know, has a tendency to walk this crop up. I think there's a big question mark about that. And honestly, I think the price action to this point would tell you that the market is betting the under and that the yields actually from the USDA probably will have to soften going forward. Illinois is the prime example for that crop, for that, Todd. I mean, I was on a crop tour last week. I was in Illinois, Missouri, Nebraska, South Dakota, Minnesota, Iowa, and then back to Illinois. And I can tell you that we're the driest area of that entire, you know, that entire trip. And the fact that the pro farmer is finding numbers below last year in corn in Illinois isn't, I don't think, too big of a surprise. So, you know, that's a great example where to get to that record yield that the USDA is talking about, that 188 plus type of a number, you need a lot of things to go right. And if Illinois is not going to pull the lever, you know, the West can make up for some degree of that, but I'm not saying we have a bad crop. I'm not saying we don't have a record crop, but I think the high water mark is in.
I wondered about that, thinking about what Ohio and Indiana, those numbers coming out of those two states to begin with, and that Illinois was probably pivotal because the West was just going to pick up whatever Ohio and Indiana, which are smaller states in corn production for sure. Ohio, I think, is 8 or 9. They're well down the line. Indiana, right, ranks 5 or 6, depending on what year it is. Kansas sometime is in front of them, which tells you a lot about the size of Indiana as well. When you take all of that into consideration, Illinois being pivotal, if Illinois comes out with a good yield, not the 221, but they come out with, let's say, a record yield at 211 again, or even if they're at the 204, how big is that national yield? Are we at 186 or 7 rather than nearly 89?
Yeah, I think the yield overall, it's going to be hard even with Illinois coming down with the way the Western Corn Belt is set up today to drop too much. So, you know, low end might be 184 in my mind today. It feels like with what we're seeing. But again, I think the big variable always is, and maybe the populations, as Kurt alluded to, will help offset this. But what this disease pressure is really going to do as we finish the crop, I think that's the unknown variable that is not able to be predicted until the combines roll through the field here in late September and October. But irregardless, I stand the fact that it feels like this crop is a new record. It's just a question of how big of a record it will be.
So the trade in Chicago is determining on the futures how big the crop is. However, the elevator system is making a different sort of hedge, relatively speaking, on it's a big crop and we have to figure out how to put it and the soybeans away. And that's going to be hard on basis already is.
Yeah, I think you've seen like some of the major processors, Decatur 33 under the X, which is the cheapest I can remember them being this early in the year, just trying to figure out how, without a soybean export program, no China, you know, what that interior demand and what they're able to absorb is going to be. We talked a little bit about that before the show, that it feels like with the farmer undersold today to generate cash, even with a weaker basis, they probably still lean into soybeans. They have to move and selling soybeans across the scale simply to generate cash because they can move and generate cash in a smaller volume. So I think that's going to pressure bean basis. Could be much uglier than corn, but corn is going to be awfully wide if some of these record-breaking crops come to fruition.
When you talk to producers about which crop they need to put in the bin for storage, when they have space that they really feel like they can swap out, what are you telling them?
Well, basically, like Brian alluded there, they're going to move beans. Beans is the natural one to move. They like to hang on or store corn. A lot of guys have gone to some alternative storage options, bags. Ethan in our office, he had to drive clear to Minnesota to get a bagging machine because there's just none around. There's some in Canada, but he was worried about getting back into the U.S., so he naturally went to Minnesota there. But yeah, it's a matter of finding some storage and be able to ride the storm out here.
Yeah, Todd, I mean, to Kurt's point, I think, you know, beans are the natural, beans are the traditional fallback. I think producers should be aware of and taking a look at what's available, you know, maybe storing corn temporarily in what would normally, you know, outside in a bag or a pile and utilizing what would normally be corn space for soybeans. When you look at these cash carries, even into just November, let alone December or January, some very big numbers here. And, you know, good, maybe a point to think about that we haven't talked about. You've been talking about futures and, you know, the crop estimates and when the market bottomed. And take, you know, good example, the corn market last year, these corn bottomed on August 26th. We're right in that time period. But a futures bottom and a cash bottom are two very different things. And, you know, looking at the logistical challenges that we're going to have this year. Now, one good thing we have, commercial space is mostly empty, but it's going to fill very quickly and based on this size of a crop. So look at your alternative options. Do, you know, it's time to get creative. It's time to do things that maybe are outside of your comfort zone or think about it anyway. And, you know, that bagger that Kurt mentioned, I mean, it's like talking about the election, COVID politics. Some people love them. Some people hate them. Very polarizing subject. But, you know, non-traditional, maybe it's filling your fertilizer shed. Maybe it's doing something a little out of whack. But when you can pick up 30, 40, 50 cents of carry in a matter of 30, 45 or 60 days in a margin environment that we're in currently with kind of low commodity prices, definitely have to be flexible here.
I'd like to ask you a little bit, Brian, about logistics and basis and natural barriers across the United States, the rivers. So the Mississippi, the Illinois, the Ohio, because sometimes you can really see from one side of the river to the other. There is a basis difference. Just the river seems to be a natural spot for basis to change. Can you tell me when there is a huge crop in the Western United States, what it does to basis and logistically how that changes?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is you look at the Western Corn Belt, and obviously that tends to have a pull when you have no export program or a minimal export program booked down at the Gulf, say for soybeans. You could see cheap basis up to South Dakota, North Dakota, $1.50, $1.60 under start to be competitive to the river. And that ends up influencing not just the overall space at the elevator, the processor interior in the Eastern Corn Belt basis, but also the fact that now the elevator in the East starts to feel pressure because they're not as competitive with some of the Western bushels that start to work East. And I think that is a big risk that we're going to see. Obviously, without a big book in the Gulf for soybeans, you don't have that program. We're already seeing the Delta come off with some of their crop moving to the river, and that's had some pressure with a lack of demand. And the one bright spot, if I flip the script a little bit, is that our corn program continues to be very robust. We saw big export numbers for the new crop compete. Brazil, Argentina continue to be at a premium to the U.S. offers out front. So that is a good positive from the demand standpoint to support basis to what Dave was saying. If you could ride the storm out the next 30 to 60 days on the basis side, you might be able to pick up some really good cash carry.
There was a good futures market on Thursday for soybeans, particularly for soybean oil. I suppose it may have to do something with an announcement coming Friday from Washington, D.C. I don't know whether we have very much information about that. Did you hear anything? What are the rumors as they're related to those issues?
Yeah, Todd, what you're referencing is the small refinery exemption. I believe there's 196 exemptions on that list, or, you know, pending exemptions, I should say, that go all the way back to 2016. And then Reuters and Bloomberg, Big Wire Services, both reported today that the EPA is ready to make an announcement on those waivers as early as tomorrow, and that it will be, speculation is that it will be a little more favorable maybe for the ag side than what we initially thought. And that ignited a soybean rally today. If some of those exemptions aren't granted, it helps us, you know, with a higher biofuel mandate and blending requirement, that, you know, we're still on the bullish side of the crush and the oil demand. So we will see how that plays out. When you look at soybeans, to your point, Todd, I mean, we're 75, 76 cents off of that low that we made in early August. We're the highest level we've been in beans in 7 weeks since the mid-June. And certainly for farmers who need to make catch-up sales, to Brian's point, and particularly in beans, you know, you need to be paying attention. I'm not saying, you know, picking a top is pretty much useless here, but, you know, you have to be able to take some small victories in this market. And to, you know, one more, you know, point on the logistics that he said, I think it's complicated further this year, the fact that China has bought zero new crop beans. And in doing so, that's normally a very strong PNW market that helps lift some of that Western crop away in that Northwestern belt. This year, that There's no bid going to the PNW for beans. So those beans are going to compete in our system and in our river system and our rail and our processing system and add even a little additional pressure. So, I mean, be aware of those factors and how you're planning things and in how basis can be dynamic here.
Can you clarify for me why it is that the small refinery exemption, which has to do mostly with ethanol, actually all with ethanol because it's ethanol producers, would have an impact on soybean oil? Is it about the advanced biofuel that substitutes into the biofuel space that sometimes that ethanol fills sometimes in the advanced side?
Yeah, I think that's probably correct. I think obviously, as you mentioned, it's mostly tied to the corn-based side, but I think that the fact the advanced, when you talk about renewable diesel and some of the initiatives that you're seeing with the oil, I think that's a component of why the SR potential waivers are such a big deal to the bean market. The one thing I will also add on to what Davis said, the bean market, we have to be cautious. I think beans as a whole, because of the RVO and what that all means long term, are struggling to find what true value is, because while oil is potentially a very bullish item, we've talked about before, meal is kind of the dead weight potentially hanging down on the market, because obviously you don't generate 60% of your bean is meal. So obviously we have to figure out long term what that means for meal demand, even if we have a bullish oil scenario, and where beans fit in the whole spectrum. You cannot store meal nearly as long as some other products. And so I think that could be a challenge to figure out where fair value is for soybeans.
Renewable volume obligations, or the RVOs, the oil and the meal, of course, the products of the crush from the soybean, and the meal can be shipped overseas. Difficult because we don't have the rail lines coming out of the Western Corn Belt yet, really headed towards the PNW. So the meal's going to pile up somewhere, I suppose, and it's just going to be a drag.
Yeah, it's going to be a drag. I think that's the biggest thing that is yet to be determined. I think that's why it's been hard, even with the projected tight carryout that we saw with the acreage shift here a week or so ago, with beans losing acres. It kind of ignited a little bit of a friendliness with the projected carryout and strong demand, but you still have this product, a meal that is a dead weight, trying to figure out what we do with it to offload it if we are really going to crush more beans for oil.
On the acreage changes, Brian reminded me there's more corn acres out there, and USDA still put that record yield on this crop, despite the fact that they're in more marginal areas, or some of them are, of course. Looks like those areas are going to really produce. Again, I come back to the idea, is the West going to overcompensate for everything that might be going on east of the Mississippi River?
Well, they say as you drive through Nebraska, you can't see where the irrigation pivots are because the ends are just as green. So, yeah, it's going to be a fairly good crop as a whole. Yeah, I don't know how you can have record yields when you got some holes around, but we're fixing to find out. But one thing you got to remember, too, with this disease issue is the question of test weight. And so when you start messing with test weight later on, which we don't know now, that can probably be a big factor, too. When you look at where we are, probably national yield, they won't probably address that till the January report. It's last year in January report, they dropped the corn yield 4 bushels an acre. The JSA team feels we're kind of at a 185 area when you factor all this stuff in at the moment.
I will say that because the crop is so good and test weights may vary from one place to the other, when farmers store all of this crop on their farm in the bin, they probably won't know how many bushels they have. They'll have an idea, but they could be way off because test weight will make them way off. It's a 30,000 bushel bin, but how many bushels are really in there if it's test weight at 58 bushel or 58 pounds? And so these are things that will keep this a mystery, probably all the way, I guess, through, well, next fall. They might be okay in January, but that's a survey of farmers, relatively speaking, of what they think their crop size was. So there's a lot of variables still coming in this marketplace.
Yeah, Todd, and to your point, I think this year is a great example. I think what we found out is there was a lot of naysaying in the commercial circles about corn and the USDA got the crop wrong and it had to be bigger than indicated because basis and spreads were so weak in the old crop through the spring, the summer, and really into the fall. And I think our view on that is that what happened is actually the performance of corn was better. The starch content was better. So the ethanol yields were better. The feed conversions were better. All the ways that we use corn, it took less corn to get to those issues. So you're going to reverse that this year. If we have this light test weight, you're actually going to create a little bit of additional demand, and it can add up to 200, 250, 300 million bushels over time, but you're not going to know that until probably well into next year. So, can it be an issue? Yeah. Is it an issue that's going to affect prices probably here between now and the first of the year? You know, not unless we have some pretty dramatic problems, I don't think.
So I hauled off a 58. He's down at 52 on some of those pounds. Number two yellow corn is 56, unless it's in the export market where it's 54 pounds when you ship it overseas. The elevator really does know what they put in the bin because they have weights. Mm-hmm. That makes a difference, I suppose, on the elevator side.
It does make a difference, but, you know, some of the larger farmers, you could also say, have scales when they bring it in, too. A lot of them, if they don't have a scale where they unload into their bin, they've got a scale in their auger wagon. So I think pounds is really what you're looking at in conversion to bushels, and you're going to have a feel for that as you go through the field if you've got a scale system, and I think that's could be important to know what you, absolutely have. I think the other phantom component that we experienced here this past fall was how dry the crop was coming in. You don't understand how much you give up in yield when you're harvesting 12-13% corn out of the field versus the standard number 2 15-0. So I think there were some bushels lost then. I'm not saying this year is going to be the repeat of last fall of 24 and dry, but certainly we've had a lot of heat. I think the welcome weather of cooling down certainly will help elongate the cycle of the plant, and maybe we don't dry down and lose so much yield from shatter loss and things in the field as we get out there this fall.
So we've talked about a lot of things, but really we haven't come to the crux of the matter, which are prices are low. Based on what the Farm Doc team put out this week with updated numbers, and they used a fairly large corn price still, and a decent soybean price. They're still looking at losses in central Illinois on a cash rented farm of $70 or $80 an acre for corn. Farmers have to figure out how to manage that kind of loss, and it's not easy. What kind of strategies do each of you think they might try to deploy?
Well, that's a tough one. It varies from individual to individual, but we've been in the advice part if we can find some decent basis, which there is none now, to move it and replace a little bit of it. But we're kind of looking at storing this crop into year end. I don't know if guys really want to sell a whole lot here because they're pretty well where they want to be this year. It's in the next year where they want the income. That's where the uncertainty is on it. So, you know, with this bump up in through here, I think you can put some hedges on and at least protect your downside that way at these levels a little higher.
Yeah, Todd, to your point, really tough from a per acre P&L on the farm, just looking at commodity prices. So I think you have to do a couple of things. One, as we've talked about, cash carry in the market and being able, you know, just because there's carry there, don't fall asleep. Make sure you're looking, you have offers in to sell that crop and capture that carry. But ARC and PLC are other things that you need to look at. There's a cash flow issue there, but because of the changes that have been made, two important things. One, this year, you're going to get the better of ARC or PLC, regardless of what you chose at the FSA office because of the changes made inside the big better or the BBB. Additionally to that, we have raised the reference prices on PLC, and we've increased the coverage from 86% to 90% on ARC. Those add about, call it Central Illinois, rough math, $20, $22, $25 an acre to that protective deal. And when we're calculating those values today at some of these prices, we're getting close to $800 an acre at some points. So every county is different. We'll have to wait and see. Keep in mind, those payments did not come out until October of next year. Beneath that, you've got crop insurance. If you're in an SCO or an ECO environment where you took 90, 95% coverage, you're certainly in a position where your yield trigger is very, very high. If you're at a typical 80 or 85% crop insurance level, you're probably not in a position where we're going to harvest a lot of income from that. But picking up these little pieces of income along the way, there's rumors today that the USDA and several folks from Congress are talking to the Trump administration about an aid package for beans because of the situation with China and not buying any beans from the US, at least at this point. We'll have to wait and see where that goes. But you're going to have to combine what you can do on the commodity revenue side with what you can get through these government programs and these ad hoc disaster programs and pick up every rock along the way.
An MFP payment seems like it would be a hard sell in Washington, D.C., given tariffs across the board with everybody to pay out farmers. But it's been done in the past. We'll see whether that happens. What's your advice to producers?
I think right now, as simple and maybe as non-risk management as it will sound, to Dave's point, I think if you have a sound crop insurance policy with ECO or SCO on top, I think the worst thing that could happen right now is for the market to start rallying in the month of October. I think you have to understand what your actual yield is compared to your APH. And I've even thought for guys, the few handful of people that might be, further sold than most, maybe looking at cheap out of the money calls as some upside protection against potentially losing that insurance indemnity. Because I think there's a very good chance for those that have a county-based ride-on product to their individual underlier could lose their payment if we steadily climb during the month of October. We've seen that happen before. Outside of that, I think Dave also mentioned, I agree with him 100%, you have to look to sell the cash carry. Obviously, that's dictated how far out you go based on when you need cash flow. But I think when you have large carries, when you have big crops, what ends up tends to end up happening is the lead futures month, wherever it goes off the board, the next one gravitates lower towards it. So you lose that carry if you don't lock that in and sell it ahead of time.
Let's get a final word now from each of you. Kirk Kimmel of agmarket.net. I'll start with you for the day.
As a livestock feeder, I think you got to be on your toes here and take advantage of some wide basis and some cheaper feed deeds here this fall, early winter. Conspiracy theory is they came in with the high yield this year because they underestimated last year's crop, so they're trying to balance it out. Whether or not, who knows? But lastly, too, as the yield does maybe come down and through here, they got demand so high that one might offset the other here for a little while. But the bottom line is with lower test weights and a huge corn demand, I don't think so.
I'm pretty sure we don't deal with conspiracy theories most of the time, but some of the time, probably. Dave Chatterton of Strategic Farm Marketing, your final word for the day.
Well, I'm going to ask Kurt to check on the moon cycle here. We'll talk beyond that. Look, I mean, we've talked about a lot of stuff, commodity prices. I'm going to mention kind of one good thing that did happen today. We got kind of some news from the RMA and through the reconciliation bill that crop insurance is actually going to improve for next year. We're going to get higher subsidies on your traditional RP products. We're going to see the subsidized rate for SCO and ECO both go to 80%. So you're talking about a product that can take you up to 90 or 95% coverage, subsidized by the government at 80%, makes it very affordable for next year. With the PLC reference prices coming up, we've got a better safety net going into next year. So starting to think ahead, stay in touch with your crop insurance agent and how some of these changes may affect you. And keep in mind next year, I mean, one thing we didn't talk about, Todd, I mean, pretty big acreage swing being penciled in next year. A lot of soybean acres coming in. If we don't have that China program, be sure you're staying ahead of yourself. We talked about the old crop soybean market and up 75 cents off those lows. But using some premium products, you can see $11 floors on that new crop 26 here. A 1x2 contract, any kind of a structured or, accumulating type of a structure that you want to talk about. Those have their ups and downs, but be sure you're looking out and making ahead and looking ahead to next year, particularly in the soybean market with what looks like a trade war, definitely in place here.
Gary Schnicke, agricultural economist at the University of Illinois, has already looked at these numbers as it relates to SCO and the higher subsidies and simply says every farmer should probably not only consider it for next year, but should probably take it. Your final word as well, Brian Stark from the Andersons.
Well, Dave stole my thunder a little bit because I think the best sale to you, what he said is to look out to 26. I think right now there's not a lot of good options. I think the first thing would be if you can cash flow, I think there's certainly some opportunities, some real good interior basis in beans, locking in cash carry, utilizing storage versus the conventional selling them across the scale to generate cash. But obviously each individual farm is going to be different, but that would be my recommendation to move a little more corn during fall. Just to avoid some of the wide bean basis we'll see. And then to Dave's point, I think you need to look out towards 26. That tends to be the best protective or at least opportunity environment for the farmer right now. Take advantage of maybe some carry and some good values. It might be closer to the cost of production, maybe even a little profitable compared to what we're seeing here in the 25 values.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may hear the whole of the program online at willag.org. Our thanks go to our panelists today. They include Brian Stark of the Andersons, Dave Chatterton from Strategic Farm Marketing, and Kurt Kimmel of agmarket.net. Don't forget that you can drop by the University of Illinois tent on the Farm Progress Show site next week on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. Our Commodity Week panels are at 10 o'clock in the morning the first 2 days and at 9 a.m. And we'll also be joined by Arlen Suderman. You want to drop in for that one. Matt Bennett will be along, as will Colin Waters of the Illinois Corn Growers Association. That's at 9 a.m. on Thursday morning. Check out our website at willag.org and the calendar of events. You can see all the things that are happening in the University of Illinois tent throughout the day. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.